This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Hi, and welcome to Campus Voices. I'm your host, Hunter Mitchell. Today, we will be talking about the foster care system currently in place in the state of Kentucky. According to the Kentucky Cabinet for Health and Family Services, there are more than 8,000 children placed within the Commonwealth's foster care system. WRFL's Maggie Davis reports on the ever-evolving system and the recent changes within the structure.
Several facets of the foster care industry have improved in recent years, but there are still areas needing improvement. Kentucky is still working to increase placement stability, to decrease maltreatment recurrence, and to increase the frequency of caseworker visits with families. But, according to the Commissioner for the Kentucky Department for Community-Based Services, Adria Johnson, limited funding creates limited results.
We have a workforce that in some areas of the state is very stressed. I mean, when you look at the numbers of investigations and calls of, suspicions of abuse or neglect, that keeps growing and puts a lot of stress on our investigative workers. And so when caseloads are high, our ability to be responsive to foster families, isn't always what I think any of us would want it to be.
Placement stability has leveled out in the past decade. According to the Kentucky Cabinet for Health and Family Services, the average child in foster care now relocates just over 3 times. And while Commissioner Johnson agrees that recruiting more foster families and improving placement stability is a main goal of the Child Welfare Service, it's equally important to hone in on specific niches that are still missing.
Do we need homes that will take sibling groups? Do we need homes that will take older teens? Do we need homes that will take medically complex children? Homes that will take children of color, minority children, Hispanic children?
African American children are the largest minority group in the foster care system. According to the American Society for the Positive Care of Children, 24% of foster children are African American. 21% are Hispanic. For WRFL, I'm Maggie Davis.
Here now to provide guidance on the complicated world of Kentucky's foster care industry are Elizabeth Crony and Regina Kliachkin, both from KVC Kentucky. This organization provides family-related services to more than 12,000 children and families around the state each year. Elizabeth Crony is the president of the organization. She's earned her Master of Social Work, and outside of her work with KVC Kentucky, she's transformed the children's mental health sector in rural Kentucky, served on multiple foster care review boards across the state, and has been given the Champion for Children Award for her work preventing child abuse in the Commonwealth. Regina Kliachkin serves as the vice president of operations of KVC Kentucky. She also has her Master of Social Work. Before her jump to the VP of operations, though, she served KVC as the Director of Clinical Services and Director of Intensive In-Home Services. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, of course. Gina, we're going to start with you. Like we just heard, one of Kentucky's issues is with placement stability. So over the past few decades, the average number of moves a child makes has decreased and stabilized in around 3 moves per child. So what changes have actually been made so that we're seeing that decrease?
There are likely a combination of factors that have affected this. I believe really that the cabinet has worked intentionally, and we've worked with the cabinet as community partners to strengthen the practices with families, with potential foster families and with current foster families. They receive better training. They've really worked on the foster parent training guidelines. There really is more of an emphasis on an understanding about trauma and trauma's effects on children. And I think that all of that information and education has gone to our foster parents and helped stabilize placements as well. There also has been an initiative called Project Safe Space that the cabinet's been behind that really has been looking at standardized screeners and better assessment of children as they enter and out of home care so that they're getting a better match with the right foster home. We really want the right foster home the first time.
Absolutely. And Liz, how much does that stability help a child who's in the system?
It's very important for a child to have that stability. I recently saw an article and that was published by a researcher, and it said after a certain number of moves, if a child is convicted of a crime, it should be a mitigating factor because those moves are so detrimental to the child's health and well-being.
Absolutely. And what can Kentucky do to lower the number of moves more than they already have?
I think to continue with the efforts that they've started with better assessment, better training for foster parents, where there's a lot of work being done on diligent recruitment and recruiting the right types of foster parents and giving them the adequate education and support that they need.
And that's a perfect segue. Do you have something to add,
Liz? Oh, sorry. I was going to get Gina maybe to talk a little bit about victim kin and how important that is for the, you know, finding the right placement for a child so it doesn't really always have to be a foster parent, you know.
What we found, and I know we're going to talk a little bit more later about the opioid epidemic, is that there are so many children coming into out-of-home care than were before. And what we're seeing with substance use is that it's not only affecting those parents, often it affects relatives that are related to the child. And so being able to place children with relatives isn't always an option either. And so really looking at fictive kin, which is, you know, the state is moving in that direction. So fictive kin are folks like neighbors, mentors, teachers, even folks that have really known these kids for a long time and have a significant emotional relationship with these children and want to be able to provide a parent-like or relative-like placement for them.
And we've mentioned the importance of finding not only a family, but the right family.
Right.
So what is Kentucky doing to vet potential families and potential foster parents?
Sure. I can talk just about our process. Uh-huh. We have a small foster care program and it's growing, but it's an extensive training and recruitment and assessment process. It consists of interviews with everyone in the home. We do background checks, reference checks, credit checks. We are looking at their beliefs about parenting and their practices with parenting. If they have children, we interview their children regarding their parenting practices. There is 2 to 3 months of training that they go through. We're looking at the home. We're looking for safety issues with the home. So there is a really lengthy vetting process and lots of education that's provided throughout. So both at the end, we as an agency and the family feels good about moving into a fostering role.
Liz, you've done some work on foster care review boards. So when you're reviewing the system, what issues do you guys still see?
Well, I haven't been on a foster care review board for a number of years now, but what was really important for us was that the children, there was a really good, thorough assessment done of the child and looking at the whole child and making sure that that child was getting the services that they needed. And the other important piece was setting up visits with their family, whether that be their parents, siblings, if they're separated from siblings, grandparents. And so it was like looking at the whole assessment piece and really making sure that that child's needs were being taken care of individually. And it wasn't just a cookie cutter assessment that, you know, every child's going to get 1 hour counseling. Every child's going to get, you know, one visit with their parent every other week. So it was very important to really specialize that assessment and the treatment plan to match the child.
Okay. KVC Kentucky does a lot of work with family preservation and reunification. So how different is this from the more easily recognizable foster care system where the child is placed with an unrelated family?
So in our family preservation and reunification services, we are really trying to prevent out-of-home placement or reunify children back to their biological placement with their biological parents if they have been removed. And so we have a wonderful success rate. You know, upwards of 95% of our families are able to maintain safely together. So we're very proud of the outcomes. And whenever a child doesn't have to go through the trauma of entering the foster care system, it's better for their well-being. It's better for the family. We do believe children grow best in home. And so that is really our largest program. We do foster care. We understand there's a need that sometimes they can't be maintained safely, but our goal really is to try to have every family grow up in their family.
KVC has other programs throughout the U.S., like West Virginia and Kansas and Nebraska. So do you guys have interaction with the presidents of those other branches at all?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have monthly phone calls with all the presidents. We get together every other month. Sometimes if we need information, then we'll just pick up the phone and call them, and we can look at what programming they've done and garner information from them, as well as share information about what we're doing. So it's really worked out very well.
Do you see any overlap at all between the state, like between Kentucky and the states that they're in?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Okay. Definitely.
And sometimes we can see trends that are happening. You know, I think the opioid crisis happened here first, and now it's starting to move to those counties. You know, we're starting to see it in Kansas and Nebraska and some of those areas. So the strength of a health system in different states, you can see trends in different places. Sometimes they all overlap. Sometimes you kind of can see them coming to you.
And we just heard Commissioner Johnson say that state resources are stressed because there just aren't enough caseworkers to handle the calls coming in. So, Gina, what issues do those tight resources present?
Well, our system, if we're honest about it, and I think Adria is, and we all are, that it's been underfunded for a very long time. And now we have more placements. The latest number is over 9,000 children in out-of-home care. So the budgets really were not built for that. You know, the governor did a large ask for social services in this budget, and we're hoping that that comes through. But that they've been historically underfunded for a long time. We also are working with the cabinet and thinking through ourselves strategies, because we just aren't graduating enough potential staff for the cabinet or even for our service delivery in the future. So how do we recruit high schooler? You know, how do we recruit for the field earlier?
Well, you mentioned Matt Bevin, and during his campaign and inauguration season, he pledged to make the reform of the state's adoption and foster care systems a priority. Now he's obviously 3 years into his term, and the question has been, has he delivered? WRFL reporter Maggie Davis went to Frankfort to find out.
When Matt Bevin ran for Kentucky governor, he called Kentucky's adoption and foster care systems, quote, a driving reason for his campaign. Bevin has experienced the complicated nature of these systems as much as anyone. He's the father of 4 adopted children, as well as 5 biological children. Once elected, he voiced his dedication towards fixing the systems, saying, quote, there will be no state in America that more safely, more quickly, more efficiently, and more cost-effectively facilitates the adoption process. According to Commissioner Adria Johnson, the governor has stayed true to his word.
I'm very thankful that Governor Bevin, when he stood up and gave his State of the Commonwealth address for the first time in a very long time, predates me, I can say that, and predates many here in this cabinet, stood up and very clearly showed the importance that he places on this work in this space by including in his recommended budget substantial investment to get some things done.
Last year, Governor Bevin appointed Daniel Dumas as the, quote, adoption czar of the Commonwealth. Following controversy regarding his lack of experience and his high salary, the czar's contract was terminated a short 7 months into his term. But, according to Commissioner Johnson, Dumas' short tenure doesn't mean his hiring was a failure.
As the governor said, I think, you know, his charge was to come in and do some assessing and observing and to make some recommendations, and he did that.
Some of the so-called czar's recommendations led to bills that were eventually signed into law. The 2017 session of the Kentucky General Assembly passed legislation that allows children to be placed with non-family members rather than being placed into the system. This includes a godparent, a coach, a teacher, or anyone else with a significant emotional relationship with the child. Additionally, lawmakers passed a bill allowing children in care to receive their driver's license, even without a parent's consent. For WRFL, I'm Maggie Davis.
Those two laws were considered two major wins for the foster care industry. And Liz, in your experience, we talked about this a little bit already, but in your experience, how much do those simple normalities, like living with someone they already know, or being able to drive a car, help someone who's living in care?
Well, I think it really helps a child live a normal life, just like we would want for our own children. Mm-hmm. You know, 16 years old, you want to get a permit and get a driver's license and be a normal kid. And they've already had enough trauma in their life that we shouldn't be prohibiting them from doing the normal things that teenagers do. So it is a real win for children.
Are these laws already common in other states?
In some states they are, but it's a federal mandate now, and so mm-hmm. it's being pushed out to states. Some states were a little more prepared than others, but I think Kentucky's done a really great job of moving forward in that direction.
Do you know if there are any other laws that other states have that Kentucky doesn't have yet?
No, I think Kentucky is pretty progressive okay. as far as foster care and child welfare. We've been doing in-home services, trying to prevent children from coming into out-of-home care for the past 20 years. And it's something that when you go to conferences and present, people are very excited about.
You've both been working with this industry for a while now. Can you both, you know, sort of speak on the czar controversy? And do you think there will be any long-term benefits from his seven-month term?
Well, you know, I think what we saw was the governor's intensity to make changes in the child welfare system. And I think as a new governor coming in and somebody that hadn't been in politics before, he really thought that bringing somebody from externally into the system could lead to change. And I think that was, you know, a great thing for him to do. But I also believe that he wisely concluded that he really had some strong leaders in his own mm-hmm. executive branch, and he could push the reforms through those leaders.
Do you have anything to add, Gina?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it demonstrates his commitment and mm-hmm. willingness to try different initiatives and to explore different opportunities to really get at this issue with child welfare. He is very committed to solving this.
And this is to either of you, but do you think that position needs to be refilled, or do you think that the recommendations he made are enough to hold the state over?
Well, I saw it as an experiment, and I think the governor is not afraid to be innovative, but he, again, has a very strong bench mm-hmm. With his leadership at the cabinet. And so I think there are a lot of thought leaders.
We've heard about what's already being done within the industry, but there are still plenty of statewide and even countrywide issues that are forcing the system to change. WRFL reporter Maggie Davis reports on the driving factor behind increasing foster care numbers.
Last April, Kentucky had 8,188 children in the foster care system. As of April 2018, that number has increased to 8,795 children. That's over a 7% increase in the last year alone. And while there are plenty of factors that could contribute to this steep rise, the Commissioner for the Kentucky Department for Community-Based Services, Adria Johnson, is quick to point to the culprit.
Substance abuse is a factor, a dynamic, a factor present at removal in about 70% of cases. And I think that is an underestimation, because a lot of times it's substance abuse that's co-occurring with other issues, whether that's domestic violence or, you know, negligent home conditions. The root of all of it seems to be tied to substance abuse.
The opioid crisis has hit Kentucky especially hard, including drugs such as oxycodone, heroin, and fentanyl. According to a poll by the Appalachian Regional Commission, residents across Appalachia are 55% more likely to die from a drug overdose than people in the rest of the country. This then leads to a steep increase in the number of children entering the foster care system in these areas. For WRFL, I'm Maggie Davis.
Gina, obviously the opioid crisis is having an impact, but just how much have those increasing numbers already affected the foster care system's efficiency in the last few years?
These cases, you know, the substance use epidemic is a very complex issue. And what we have seen, Adria speaks to it as well, but almost every case that we are seeing, you know, she said 70%, but even our family preservation and reunification services, almost all the families that we're working with are affected by substance use in some way. And unfortunately, we are working with so many traumatized children that have witnessed overdoses, yep. that have multiple family members that have overdosed and passed away. It really brings the complexity level of the trauma up, but also just the workload and the caseload for the state workers. It is unthinkable, the amount of investigations and ongoing cases in children that we have in out-of-home care right now.
And you have something
to ask? This crisis has really been unpredictable. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody saw this coming. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, the 80s when we had the AIDS crisis. And especially, like, if you look back historically, what's happening in our Eastern Kentucky region is kind of like what happened in South Africa during the 80s, where a whole generation was being wiped out. And that's what we're seeing.
And other than completely eradicating the epidemic, what else can be done to lessen that burden?
Well, I do believe the cabinet, we have a creative program with the cabinet called K-STEP, Kentucky Strengthening Ties and Empowering Parents. And that program really is just focused on parents with investigations, with open cases related to substance use. And we are working long-term in-home services to keep those kids in the home. We're doing a rapid assessment, rapid access to substance use services. So I think it really calls for new programming and creative programming around this substance use issue.
And with this epidemic, we're seeing an unusually high rate of women who are using or overdosing. And so this is kind of why children are more at risk, because the mother a lot of times is the primary caregiver.
Gina, you've worked as KVC Kentucky's Director of Clinical Services for a while now. So from a health standpoint, are children born already having been exposed to substances considered, you know, more at risk than for future risks? Or for future issues,
yeah,
I mean?
I think the jury is still out about that. You know, we went through the crack baby concept a while ago and worried about those children. And really what the research is showing now is that those children later in life are not really showing much difference from other children.
Okay.
And so I think we're very hopeful. Of course, we never want to label any children as, that this is going to be disastrous for them or that they're not going to be able to receive help. So we always want to be optimistic about those things. And it does require a stability in the home. It does require, you know, those type of foster parents that we're looking for. And those parents, as they gain sobriety, creating a structured home environment that's nurturing.
Liz, you did a lot of work in rural Kentucky in the 90s when the epidemic was really starting to spike. What changes have been made within the system across the state since then to account for that spike?
Well, you know, what we're seeing is the widespread use of prescribing OxyContin. And so that led to an increase in other prescription opioids. And then there was greater restrictions. And then that led to the heroin and the fentanyl epidemic. So then there's an increase in those drugs being used. And then there's an increase in the number of kids coming into care. And so with a system that is already underfunded, and not just the child welfare system, but we're looking at justice, we're looking at the number of individuals that are in our prison system that is going to max out here, and I think by the spring of next year. So we're seeing all of these different things happening with this problem that we just did not predict as a commonwealth.
And while the opioid epidemic is sweeping the country, it's not the only issue worsening conditions for the foster care system. WRFL reporter Maggie Davis explains a connected problem.
Even if a parent's drug addiction doesn't lead to death, it often leads to incarceration. According to the commissioner for the Kentucky Department for Community-Based Services, Adria Johnson, this is a growing problem alongside the opioid crisis in the Commonwealth.
Kentucky is number one in the nation for children that have incarcerated parents. If you spend some time talking to the Justice Cabinet, you will see that when you look at the number of moms that are incarcerated, by and large, that is due to drug-related charges. So it's just all interconnected here.
Amachi Central Kentucky is a mentoring program that works with these connected issues. Amachi seeks to pair positive adults with children who have one or both parents in prison. There's a chapter in Lexington, and program director Maggie Middleton says the children who are misplaced by drug addiction suffer consequences expanding far beyond their living arrangement.
Having a parent incarcerated is a very difficult thing. It's a loss, and anytime a parent leaves the home, it is very traumatic for kids. When kids deal with that kind of trauma, they sometimes, you know, they're just trying to figure out how to have some sort of control in what is a really just chaotic environment. So sometimes kids will deal with depression, anxiety. They might act out sometimes just because they're trying to control whatever they can in their environment.
Amachi currently has 160 children paired with a mentor, with around 35 more children on the wait list pending more mentor applications. For WRFL, I'm Maggie Davis.
Like you just heard Amachi's Maggie Middleton say, children in these sorts of difficult situations often act out. Is this something that you've seen in your experience?
Absolutely. You know, a child's parent going to jail or being incarcerated, it's another form of trauma. And we've been talking about a lot of different traumatic effects. And children respond differently to that. So sometimes you see emotional dysregulation, you see depression, you see anxiety, you see those type of things. Sometimes you see behavioral outbursts. And fighting and arguing and throwing things. You see those kind of behaviors too. So that's a natural response for a lot of children going through trauma, and it differs per each individual child. So they really need individualized services.
And as you kind of just mentioned, but as clinicians, do you think that children that are put in those situations, you know, with foster care or parents incarcerated, do you think they have a higher risk for developing mental illness?
Well, I think with early intervention and support for, lots of us go through through hardships at different developmental stages. And so with the right intervention for the right issue, definitely we can prevent mental health issues down the road.
What effect do you think a positive adult mentor like the ones that Amachi had could have on these children?
I mean, it can have an everlasting effect on these children by having a positive person in their life. Even when they go return to their families, a lot of times these mentors will stay involved. And just having that stability is so important to these children. So these programs are things that we depend on, because they say it takes a village, and it really does. It's a lot of community partners working together with a large array of services that are going to stabilize these children.
I want to get both of your opinions on this last question before we wrap up. So overall, where do you think that Kentucky's foster care system stands today, and how much improvement do you think is still needed? We'll start with you, Liz.
Well, I think we're in a really good spot, but we are in a crisis, because we think by the fall, our numbers are probably going to be around 10,000.
Wow.
So it's taxing. But we couldn't be in any better position right now with the agencies that we have across the state working together, and with the leadership in Health and Family Services and Adria Johnson at the helm.
Gina?
I absolutely agree. Our big challenges really are the number of kids entering out of home care and not having the families, enough families, and working towards that, but also an insufficient workforce. So we do have some big challenges, but I agree with Liz. I mean, we couldn't have better support or better partner agencies and people really in it for the children and for the families and for solving this problem for them. So we're all in it to get the best outcomes. So I think we couldn't be better situated in that way.
Awesome. Well, foster care in Kentucky is an ever-evolving system, as we've seen, and factors ranging from an enthusiastic governor and a reformed budget to a devastating opioid crisis impact not only the system itself, but the children within it. Thank you to our experts, KVC President and Vice President Elizabeth Crony and Regina Kliachkin, for joining us and sharing their professional input on such a wide-reaching issue. Join us in 2 weeks when we discuss medical marijuana. I'm Hunter Mitchell, and you've been listening to Campus Voices on WRFL 88.1 FM.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.FM and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.FM/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.